22. Leia had seen sunsets on 100 worlds, strolled through the incomparable art galleries of Alderaan, marveled at the treasure rooms of countless palaces and museums. Seldom, however, had she seen any sight to rival the image of Han and his infant nephew, faces a few centimeters apart, regarding each other with identical expressions of dubious curiosity. Ben Skywalker, who sat enthroned on his mother's lap, formed an opinion first. The baby crowed with delighted laughter and flailed his tiny fists. A random swing caught Han on the nose and sent him reeling back, clutching his already bruised face. "They grow fast," he managed. Luke cleared his throat and Mara hid a smirk behind one hand. Her brother-in-law sent her a mock glare. "Kid takes after his mother." "I was aware of that risk," Luke said lightly. "We could happily talk about Ben all night, but perhaps you should fill us in on the Hapen situation. You might start by explaining why you look like someone who went several bad rounds with a wampa." "That's probably close to the truth, or as close as I'm likely to come," Han said, rubbing at his bruised jaw. "He doesn't remember any of the particulars," Leia put in. In a few words, she described the events that had precipitated their departure from Hapes. "Judging from the dowry gifts, it seems likely that Ta'achum is returning to the notion of finding an appropriate wife for Isolde. Han, obviously, would be a deterrent. Jag Fel, the young man who stopped the fight, wonders if perhaps they goaded Han into fighting in lieu of a conventional assassination attempt." "That would work," Luke agreed. "I don't need the Force to tell me who threw the first punch." Han pantomimed a look of wounded innocence and touched the fingers of one hand to his chest. The expression wavered, and his eyes took on the unfocused look of someone in deep thought. "Han?" Leia asked. "Just thinking about what Luke said." He glanced at his bruised knuckles. "I remember throwing the first punch and maybe one or two after that. A few bits and pieces are coming back. There's something else, too, something important. I can't quite grab hold of it." "It'll come," Leia said firmly. "Don't rush it. You've got several days of recovery time ahead, and the inactivity will be bad enough without you making yourself and those around you crazy."
"Yeah."
Han rubbed his jaw again, let out a frustrated sigh. "I hate not remembering what I did. I always remember, even after a long night in a bad tavern." Mara turned to her husband. "How about it, Skywalker? Will you still fight for me after we've been married for 20-odd years?" She lifted one red-gold brow. Luke met her gaze and her teasing challenge.
"What do you mean by still? You do your own fighting. If I forget that, I'm not very likely to survive until our 20th anniversary."
The Jedi warrior shifted the squirming baby to her shoulder and smiled contentedly. "It's such a comfort to be understood." Jaina returned from Hapes 2 days later, armed with Sensor Kahl's discoveries and several data cards of related information. She and Lobaka hurried back to the Trickster, eager to get back to work on the Yuuzhan Vong ship. She and Lobaka dragged the escape pod into a small enclosure and set to work. Jaina took one of several altered implants she'd brought back in flasks of a mineral-rich, rapid-growth medium Sensor had devised. The coral creatures were still much smaller than the one they'd re-implanted in the pirate, but Jaina thought they might serve. She took a tiny welding tool from one of her pockets and sheared off a slice of the pod's miniature Dovin basil. She fitted an implant into an irregularity of the rock-like structure and then pressed the small piece back into place. "It should be able to heal itself," Jaina said. "And if I'm right, this should alter the gravitic signature." Lobaka let out a string of yelps and growls. "I know they can't trace us right now, and yes, I want to keep things that way. But the only thing better than no information is misinformation," Jaina replied. "We want them to be able to track down and destroy one of their ships, just not this particular one." Lobaka was silent for a long moment, then he woofed sharply. "Of course it will work," she said stoutly. "The next step is finding a delivery method to implant other Vong ships. For that we'll need ships and pilots willing to go head-to-head with our galaxy's uninvited guests." The Wookiee's eyes widened in enlightenment. "That's right," she agreed. "That's why we need Kip Duron." Kip settled down on the Duracrete bench and regarded his prisoner. The Hapen pirate floated in a Bacta tank, and would likely be there for quite some time. When he was healed of everything but his lost memory, Kip would turn him loose. That knowledge bothered him less than it ordinarily would. Freedom to pillage the skies seemed a small recompense for what the man had endured. Kip silently listed the laws he and Jaina had broken, and the lines they'd crossed. Helping prisoners escape from the Hapen officials, holding one of them and transporting him to another world, submitting him for scientific testing. He didn't even want to think about the transfer of the pirate from their ship to the scientist's lab. But he couldn't ignore this particular disaster or the conclusion it left with him. Jaina was in trouble. As he'd expected, she had proven to be a talented student. She'd very quickly followed Kip's lead, and had wiped inconvenient knowledge from the minds and memories of Galanor scientists, including Lobaka, a Jedi and probably her closest friend. Kip could have lived with that. He could not have stood by and watched while this man was tested into a near-death state, but Jaina had. His apprentice had adopted his argument that the end result was more important than the path that led to it. She had pushed this philosophy to its far edges, forcing Kip to consider whether there might, after all, be boundaries. Kip supposed there was a certain cosmic justice to this. "So, what next?" he muttered. Kip wanted to defeat the Yuuzhan Vong. So did Jaina. Any energy he put into curtailing her efforts diminished the energy both of them could direct against the invaders. But how far could he let her go? And more important, if and when the time came to stop her, would he be able to? Jaina smoothed the skirt of her gown and settled down in the chair Ta'achum offered. The tight Hapen garments still pinched, but she was growing accustomed to them.
"I heard about Tristan."
"And you've come to offer condolences?" the former queen said archly as she reached for her wine goblet.
"Actually, I came to get an eyeful of his successor,"
Jaina responded in kind. Ta'achum sputtered on the sip she'd just taken and set the goblet aside. "You were right about him. His loyalties were uncertain. A rumor reached him that the imprisoned pirates could serve his interests and those of the woman he wanted to see on my throne." Jaina quickly got a lock on the queen's target.
"So you didn't send him there to free them?"
"Not directly, no."
"And if he hadn't been killed by the prisoners, he would have been caught and tried for treason,
according to Hapen law." Ta'achum lifted an inquiring brow. "You don't approve?"
"Actually, I do. No matter what happened, it doesn't reflect back on you. I assume his ties to this aspiring queen can be traced."
"Naturally. Her name, by the way, is Alicia. This latest scandal might be enough to neutralize her. If not, I may require your assistance." Jaina nodded, accepting this. She set down the goblet of gold wine she'd been sipping.
"Tell me about Sinsor Kahl."
"He was once a respected Hapen scientist, with precisely the expertise you required. Unfortunately, this expertise was achieved at the cost of horrendous and highly illegal experimentation. But I suspect you've already come to this conclusion."
Jaina nodded. "Are there others like him?"
The woman regarded her for a long moment. "How many do you need?" She sniffed at Jaina's incredulous laugh. "Progress of any sort is not easily won. There are bound to be failures along the way. And if society deems these mistakes criminal today, tomorrow it will embrace the achievements that spring from their work. men and women with intellectual curiosity should be funded and encouraged, away from the judgmental eyes of those who possess more righteousness than foresight.
So you shut them up,
hid them away, Jaina clarified. Ta Chum waved this aside. Most of them hardly notice. A well-funded lab and the freedom to work is a dream to these scientists, not a punishment. The Yuuzhan Vong are a reality, my dear, and they must be dealt with. What do you propose? Jaina quickly described the next phase of her plan. The former queen listened carefully and made several suggestions. This is excellent, she said when at last Jaina had finished. Your brothers will be avenged, and the defense of Hapes greatly strengthened. I'll see that you have everything you need. She extended a slender, jeweled hand. Jaina took the offered hand without hesitation, but not without a certain doubt. For days now she had been living in the palace, accepting the older woman's advice and hospitality. Today, however, a new line had been crossed. Kip Duron might consider her his apprentice, but in truth, Jaina wondered if her real education was taking place at the hands of Hapes' former queen. She rose abruptly.
I'd better get to it.
Of course, Ta'a Chum agreed. Jaina spun and walked out of the queen's residence, inexplicably eager to put some distance between her and Ta'a Chum. She rounded a corner quickly and had to pull up short to keep from plowing into Tenel Ka. The Dathomiri warrior's one hand flashed out to catch and steady Jaina.
I often leave my grandmother's presence at such a pace.
Jaina smiled before she realized that Tenel Ka seldom resorted to humor. You have visited Ta'a Chum frequently, the Jedi observed.
She invited me to stay at the palace, Jaina said, and shrugged. I can't exactly ignore her.
Fact. But the time you spend with her exceeds the demands of propriety.
I haven't been keeping a log. Is this a problem for you?
Tenel Ka ignored the truculent challenge.
You are a Jedi. You should be able to sense that nothing good can come from my grandmother's hand.
She's concerned about Hapes, Jaina retorted. Someone should be. I don't know anyone who is not. If the battle comes to Hapes, we will fight.
And lose.
The Yuuzhan Vong can't be fought with traditional Jedi methods. Their warriors and their living weapons are beyond the Force. To deal with them, we have to understand them. We have to beat them at their own game. Tenel Ka's face furrowed into a concerned frown.
Be careful, my friend. There is danger in making too diligent an attempt to understand the enemy. It's impossible to study something for long without being changed by it.
Jaina sniffed. If I start feeling the urge to tattoo my face, I'll be sure to let you know.
This is not what I mean, she said quickly. My concern is for things of far more...
That was a joke, Jaina broke in impatiently. And as for changes, my feeling is that by the time this war is over, none of us will be the same, even the Jedi. Maybe especially the Jedi.
Tenel Ka was silent for a long moment. Her direct, gray-eyed gaze softened, as if misted over by future possibilities. When she regained her focus, she looked troubled.
You might be right, she agreed softly.
The priest's ship glided through the sky like a malevolent gem, its many polished sides gleaming in the reflected starlight. In the control room, deep in the heart of the ship, the priest Harar stood by the Yamask pool, his fierce gaze shifting from the many-tentacled creature to the tattooed warrior at his side.
"You have not been able to re-establish contact?" he demanded of Kali La.
The warrior inclined his scarred head. "No eminence," he admitted. "The Shaper continues to study the problem."
Harar began to pace.
The War Master depends upon the Jedi sacrifice, demands it.
Several of the Peace Brigade collaborators have reported.
They have recovered two of the humans taken by the Jedi we seek.
Harar's scarred brows met in a sudden scowl. What motive might she have in sending them back? He mused. They claim to have escaped. And the priestess Aelan claimed to be a defector. This Jedi was able to block the Yamask, a most unexpected development. What more might she have done? The warrior snorted derisively. Forgive my presumption, Eminence, but it seems to me you give this infidel far too much credit. The clatter of boots announced the human's approach. Kali dismissed the escort with an absent wave and rounded on the pirates. Tell us, he demanded. The pirates gave a meandering and self-serving version of a story Harar had already heard. He cut them off when he could bear no more. So after your warriors were bested by a one-armed female, you surrendered your ship and submitted to captivity. But we escaped and we returned, one of the men dared to say. That's got to mean something. I'm sure it does, Harar agreed. What precisely remains to be seen. He nodded to Kalila. The warrior spun forward, his hands moving in a blur. Several quick, precise jabs sent the men staggering back, clutching at their throats and gasping like beached fish. Harar took a small coral shard from his sleeve and cut the slave's implants free. He examined them carefully. They seem unchanged. Release these men. Kalila drove one of his fists into each man's stomach. They fell to their knees, dragging in ragged gulps of air. Sacrifice them, Harar instructed, and then set course for the Hapes Cluster. The warrior bowed deeply. Your Eminence, we lack the forces for an effective attack on a planet of that size. We need not attack the planet, the priest said grimly. Just the Jedi. And unless I am very mistaken, she will come to us.